Our opening words this morning. I give you this to take with you. Nothing remains as it was. If you know this, you can begin again with pure joy in the uprooting. Judith Minty in Letters to My Daughters. We are delighted to welcome Joanne Friday this morning to give us our sermon. Joanne is a Dharma teacher in the Thiep Hien Order of Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Zen master who has been her teacher for 20 years. She is co-founder of the Sangha, the meditation group that meets at UUCSC on the first Sunday of each month, and it meets other places on the other Sundays as well. Please welcome Joanne.
My next life, I'll be 6 inches taller. Oh, dear. So thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real delight to be able to be with you today. Can you hear me? I'm unaccustomed to a microphone. I just wanted to say that for those of you that are not familiar with Buddhist practice, in our tradition, Thich Nhat Hanh always says he has absolutely no interest in anybody being a Buddhist. There are too many of them already, so says he. And all Buddhists are made of non-Buddhist elements anyway, and so there's no discrimination and no duality. But he also says that the Buddha simply taught suffering and the end of suffering, the way out of suffering. He offered us practices, and he said, don't take anybody's word for anything, not even mine. Trust your experience. And so we were asked not to believe anything. There's no request for us to believe anything. It's actually, for me, it's like a system of inquiry where we can use the practices, what works for us, we continue to use, and unless we're a masochist, whatever doesn't work for us, we leave behind. So it's in that spirit that I offer the sharing of our practice today. To begin with, our practice is about retraining our minds, that our minds have been powerfully conditioned since before birth, during pregnancy with our mother, after, every minute of our life. We've been, our minds are conditioned for us to develop habits of responding to life. And so our practice is about stopping, calming, resting, bringing ourselves back to that still point that other wisdom traditions talk about as well, where we can get some clarity. And it helps us, what we hope to do is to expand our capacity for love and compassion for ourselves and for everybody. That's what usually happens when we get some clarity. We see our interconnection with everybody and everything else. And when we do that, we develop a lot of compassion for ourselves. And as soon as we do that, we can't help but have compassion and understanding for everybody else, because we're all in the same boat. You are me, I am you. To begin with, I would like to invite the bell. Then I wanted to share our practice with you. So I want to invite the bell and do a very, very short guided meditation to give you an experience. Like the Buddha said, trust your experience. So I just wanted to give you a flavor for what exactly it is we do, how we go about stopping, calming, resting, and healing. Body, speech, and mind, in perfect oneness, we send our hearts out along with the sound of this bell. May all who hear it awaken from forgetfulness and transcend all anxiety and sorrow. Thank you. breathing in. I'm aware I'm breathing in. Breathing out. I'm aware I'm breathing out. In. Out. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body and any tension in my body. Breathing out, I exhale all the tension in my body. Aware of tension, exhaling tension. Breathing in, I'm aware of thoughts arising. When I look deeply, I see that they're all impermanent, products of my wondrous mind. Breathing out, just recognizing my mind as just being a mind. I bring my mind back to my breath. Thoughts arising, letting them go. Breathing in, I'm aware that for the next little while, I have nowhere to go and nothing to do. Breathing out, I'm aware that when I give myself the gift of stopping, calming, and resting, my mind and my body can heal themselves. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Stopping, calming, resting, and healing. So that's a very brief introduction to our practice. I don't know how many of you can feel the difference. What I was doing basically was guiding you through the establishments of mindfulness. Ours is a practice of mindfulness, and it's mindfulness of the breath. When we do that sitting, it helps us develop our concentration. We just keep bringing our mind back to the breath, back to the breath, back to the breath. And you might ask, well, duh, why would you do that? What's so exciting about our breath? And it's because it's always with us. It's connected to our autonomic nervous system. When we find ourselves getting anxious, upset, or fearful, we can, if we've practiced, that's our default. We just go right to the breath, bring ourselves back, And you could see in just about 4 minutes is what that took. Some of you might have had the experience of feeling more relaxed. But you come to your breath, check out your body, check out your thoughts and your feelings, let them all drop away, give yourself a little vacation for 5 minutes. If you do that at different times during the day, you'll find that you develop a lot more clarity. What happens is we go through life, we all feel pressured by time, we all have too much to do, we all overcommit. I shouldn't say everybody always, but a lot of us tend to overcommit, and we feel we don't have time for any of that. And we're like the rabbit in Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. I'm late for a very important date. Can't stop to say hello, goodbye, I'm late. Wait, I lose the time I save. My fuzzy ears and whiskers took me too much time to shave. I run and then I hop, I wish that I could fly. There's danger if I dare stop, and here's the reason why. You see, I'm late, goodbye. You know, like that. That's kind of the story of our lives sometimes. At least it can feel that way. And so you can tell I'm speaking from experience. That's the sad part about this whole thing, is everything I'm going to tell you is from my personal experience. But really, it's that is a misperception, that we don't have 5 minutes. That even if in between walking between offices, even walking to our car, even walking into Super Stop and Shop, we can come back to our breath. We can get our breath in sync with our steps. Inhaling with my left foot, exhaling with my right. Inhaling with my left, exhaling with my right. And bring ourselves back. What the illustration that's used in Buddhism is that it's like muddy, churned up water. Our minds are like that. And when the water settles, the mud settles out of the water becomes clear, then we can think. Then we have at least a chance of not making so many mistakes. So what happens instead is frequently we get all churned up and excited and nervous and anxious and fearful. And then in the middle of that, we try to make decisions. Almost never do we make good decisions in a place of fear, anxiety, all of that. If you don't believe me, there are a couple real good examples of what fear does. And this is, you say, well, what does this have to do with change anyway? our response to change, when things are going well, we don't want anything ever to change. When things are going badly, we love change to happen. We look forward to impermanence. But many, many times, it stirs up lots of anxiety in us. Even the thought of things, even if things are miserable, sometimes. It's like, what is the saying about the devil we know is less scary than the devil that we don't? So fear is a huge, huge obstacle. I said at the beginning, our practice is one about expanding our capacity for love and compassion. And fear is a huge obstacle to that. When we're in a state of fear, our heart closes. We put up all kinds of walls and barriers. And when we can see it for what it is, in our practice, we have ways of recognizing fear, getting familiar with it. We don't try to get rid of it. Thich Nhat Hanh teaches us to embrace it. Embrace the difficult emotion as a mother would a child. It's screaming at you, it wants your attention. If you try to ignore it, it's only going to scream louder. And that's usually what we do. And I'm really sad to say that this has been going on for about 2,600 years that we know of, because that's why the Buddha said suffering is the first noble truth. Because even then, people were suffering. The reason he said it, it's like, well, it's a no-brainer. Of course, everybody knows everybody suffers. You know, why does he keep repeating that for 40 years of his life? You know, because even 2,600 years ago, people didn't want to acknowledge it. That we don't like to acknowledge that, no problem, everything's fine, thank you very much. And so we work, we eat, we drink, we drug, we exercise, we do everything we possibly can to try to outrun it. But the problem is that lurking in the back of our minds is that unease, that little whispering voice that tells us, I'm tap dancing as fast as I can't outrun this. And so what the Buddha suggested is that we turn around acknowledge, I'm afraid. That's the first step. We just need to acknowledge. We can call it whatever we want. You know, it can take on many guises. Sometimes it's like self-righteousness. We can get attached to our views, and we get firmly attached to a view. We're very afraid when somebody challenges a view that we have. Like I said, if you don't believe me, we've all had front row seats to this inaction. One good example, I think, was the election that we just had. And you could watch it. It was on both sides, everybody was terrified. Fear was rampant. If the other person wins, the whole world is going to shift off its axis, and horrible thing, the world is going to destruct. I mean, we're just not going to be able to survive it. Both sides felt that way. And the interesting thing was that it's a beautiful example of why it's critically important that we are aware when we're afraid. It's really important that we recognize it and name it, see it for what it is, and befriend our fear. Because if we don't, we act out in really destructive ways. We have the capacity to do that, that we can cause lots of suffering for ourselves and everybody else. I can use the election as a good example, that what we saw was a waste of probably billions of dollars by the time it's all said, done, and counted. And people being so afraid that they use their fear to justify really bad behavior. That in Buddhism, we try our best to practice mindful speech and deep listening. That means that we listen to people in order to understand them. We listen with an awareness of what is coming up in me. Am I listening to this person but thinking, I agree, I don't agree, that's good, that's bad, that's right, that's wrong. And I have this whole binary code in place that when I'm doing that, I'm just comparing what anybody's saying to me to a list I've already made up of what I think I know. So I'm not open to learning anything. I'm just telling myself I'm completely shut off to learning a thing here. And instead, we try to listen with that awareness and listen to really understand the person that's speaking. If that would have happened at any moment during that election, I would have been so happy. And I think it might have had a different outcome. I mean, you could have understanding. And what Thich Nhat Hanh teaches us is that understanding is the basis of love. That, I don't know how many of you have ever had the wonderful privilege of being listened to that way. But if you ever have, you felt nothing but love. That is what happens. And what we find, we have a lot of practices for conflict resolution and reconciliation in our practice. And what we find is when people are able to do that, a magical thing happens in that some space gets created and there's room for reconciliation. You might have two polarized parties, but if they both can practice and just make a little crack in the cosmic egg, there suddenly becomes possibilities for solutions neither person had ever thought of before. So, I'm just describing the dangers of fear. Fear plays itself out, let's say the war in Iraq. How did that happen? Where did that come from? How did that begin? It's purely based on fear. Gets us into war, and people die because of our fear. So it's really, I hope I've convinced you, that it's very important to try to be mindful of our minds and recognize when fear has arisen in us. And then instead of acting on it, to really just breathe, come back to ourselves, look deeply, and instead of saying, that person's a creep, I can't stand the fact that the situation is the way it is, I can't bear this for one more minute, say, what can I do to help? When I come up with that question, that leaves some space for change to actually happen. And it can be much more positive change that way. We think we know the outcome. We have something, a change pending in our life. And we do. We all have change pending. We're all aging. We will all become sick and we'll all die. Sorry to give you the bad news today, but that's the truth of it. And so we all have to deal with change in those ways anyway. We know that for sure. And there's change every second. Our body's going through changes every second of our life. And yet we have this resistance to change. The Buddha also taught that the biggest illness among human beings is our unwillingness to accept what is. And we hate that. We don't want to accept things as they are. If we accepted things as they are, nothing would ever change. Injustice would run rampant. Yada, we have all these fears. Immediately, fears come up, right? When in fact, we can't do a thing about it. In this moment, right in this present moment, this is as good as anything's going to get. Again, I give you bad news. Or good news, depending on how you're experiencing this very moment. But we rail against it. No, if I accepted myself as I am in this moment, I would never get any better. And you have no idea how screwed up I am. And so if you had any clue, you would know I couldn't possibly accept myself in this moment. No, I can't do that. When in fact, we don't have a choice. I'm as good as I'm going to get in this moment. This is as good as it gets. Maybe in the next moment, there'll be a little room for improvement. But right now, this is it. Okay? So it's just like a small child. I remember years ago going to a movie with a four-year-old, and we went to a matinee in the winter. We came out of the movies, and when we'd gone in, it was daylight. When we came out, it was dark. And he stood under the marquee, and he was like this. He goes, "I don't want it to be nighttime." And when I looked at him, I said, "That's a good illustration of my mind, railing against what is. I don't want things to be the way they are. I want things to be the way I want them to be," just like a four-year-old. And so when we can just accept, what happens is that we waste a lot less energy. We waste a lot less time. Our lifetime is limited. We have a limited number of moments that we can enjoy this precious life. When we waste them railing against what is, it's a shame. We're missing our appointment with life. So what we want to be able to do is keep our appointment, really recognize what a gift this is, water lots of seeds of joy in ourselves, fill up those buckets. We have to, if we fill up our buckets with joy, we expand our capacity to be with the suffering that we all have to be with. That's what we do. We don't do that when we spend all of our time, and this is where the Buddha taught that fear, that all fear is caused by the untamed mind. So when our minds are out of control, that's why we retrain our minds, so we can choose. When I get into a difficult situation and I find my mind running off into fear and speculation, if I can notice it, if I develop mindfulness of my mind, I have the capacity to stop it, bring myself back, focus on my breath, get a grip, and deal with life a little bit more skillfully than I could have before. And to me, that's really what empowerment is. It's when I have that choice. I don't know how many of you saw the, I think maybe it's just last night or yesterday on the news, there was a man who is a gun advocate, and he was so threatened at the thought of any kind of gun control that he was just railing. And by the end of, it was so sad to watch because he decompensated right before your eyes. He started off sort of saying he was against gun control, and by the time he was finished, he was enraged. And he said, "And if anything happens that people come to take, I'm gonna start killing people." That's it. Pure fear. He was a poster child for fear. And yet here he is, wanting his gun, wanting to feel powerful. He's in the most powerless position a human being can be in. He's completely out of control of his own mind. You see? And getting upset about something, he doesn't even know if it'll happen or not. Right? And yet he's wasting precious moments of his lifetime being miserable. That's what we don't want to do. And so the way that this works, I can give you one small example. I know I haven't been here for many years. Since I was here last, I had had experience with cancer. And I got a phone call. I just put my mother into hospice care. She was in the hospital. And I went into the waiting room, got a call saying I had breast cancer. And I immediately felt terrified. I felt like ice water going through my veins. And I breathed. Because I've been doing this a while, I defaulted back to breathing. I sent myself loving kindness. And then I asked the question that Thich Nhat Hanh, I'm going to offer this to you this morning. The question to ask whenever you're feeling yourself getting swept away by fear is to ask, are you sure? Are you sure is the way that we have of not being attached to our view? Because he says, if you answer yes to that question, you should check again. To me, it's like magic how it works. There I was getting this phone call, getting this bad news, and immediately I could feel my mind being pulled off into fear and speculation. I was having death scenes and the whole thing play themselves out. And then I caught myself, breathed, got a grip, and asked, are you sure? And when I asked, are you sure, what I realized was I had no clue. No idea. It could be death. It could be almost nothing. I had nothing, no way of knowing what that meant. In that instance, I felt total peace. We all hate the idea of not knowing. We feel like we have to know everything. We have to know what the outcome. We try to control outcomes. We try to make sure nothing bad happens. We buy tons of insurance to make sure nothing bad happens. We really do our best, and we're living in a state of fear. When we can let go and say, I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what the best thing is. I have an idea, and I'm going to make steps in that direction. I'll do everything I can to, I'll use all the energy I didn't waste in confronting injustice when I see it. I'll do my best. But to get carried away, to get all worked up, to threaten to kill people when I have no idea what might happen, I don't have to do that. I can be at peace, I can show up for life and see what happens. Once we develop a practice, we develop confidence in our ability, we don't have to be afraid. We just have to have some confidence that we'll respond skillfully whatever the situation is. So we don't have to pray for nothing bad to happen. We pray for the ability to deal with whatever does. It's coming from a position of power rather than a position of fear. So I think I'll just end with Thich Nhat Hanh gave us a quote. He said, thanks to impermanence, everything is possible. So when we're confronted with change and we're feeling like we're on this slippery slope, we're trying to make solid footing. We want solid ground. We want the feeling of solid ground. The reason I chose, and there is no solid ground outside of ourselves. We're not going to find any solid ground in anybody or anything but ourselves. Having a wonderful sangha, having a wonderful support group, we need friends on the path. There's no doubt about it. The Buddha said they're 100% of the spiritual path. But when it comes to when the rubber hits the road, we need to have done our work so we have something to give those fellow travelers. If we're caught in fear and anxiety, we've got nothing to offer. We can't help. Okay? So we no longer need to desperately run around looking for solid ground. But instead, we can simply show up for life with more confidence in our ability to respond skillfully, and then we can ride the waves of change with curiosity, a sense of adventure, open-heartedness, joy, and love. That's the idea. So I hope I didn't go too far over my time. But I really appreciate the invitation to share this with you this morning. I hope that I've offered something that you can put to good use. Take care. Oh, and Thich Nhat Hanh has a whole book called Fear, in case anybody wants any more information.
And we will now have some closing words before we go to our closing circle. Thank you.
I think all of our buckets are full. How could they not be? Was that wonderful? So beautiful. Thank you. The closing words are from Thich Nhat Hanh. You are like a candle. Imagine you are sending light out all around you. All your words, thoughts, and actions are going in many directions. If you say something kind, your kind words go in many directions, and you yourself go with them. We are transforming and continuing in a different form at every moment. So may we all ride the waves of change and enjoy the ride.